I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to Minute 113 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Austin Pryor, a fellow MXMer. Welcome back to the show, Austin.
How you doing? Good to be here.
Yeah, long time no speak.
I'm ready for my Wednesday. Got a good night's sleep. Ready to go.
There you go. That's the way to do it. So minute 113 begins with Clarence basically summing it up and ends with George, wandering around Main Street. And just, he's really confused.
Yeah. I mean, Biff Tannen really did a number on Hill Valley here.
It's the same thing. It's interchangeable.
You mentioned it the yesterday, and I think maybe just that when you originally gave me these minutes all those months ago. Oh, by the way, it was just so long ago. I remember I said to you, can you send me those? I don't remember getting them. I totally got them and read them and watched the minutes and then just forgot about it. I might have even done a few notes all the way back then. But anyway, I think that was the first time I ever noticed this similarity between this movie and Back to the Future Part 2. It's so strong. It's obviously, a conscious influence, I think. I think it's fair to say when you're watching Back to the Future 2. I know, this is what they're talking about. Biff is gonna be like Potter, and didn't quite as go as far as calling Hill Valley Biffsville or Biffton or whatever.
That's actually very interesting about the fact. I was just thinking about that also. Like, why didn't they do that? Maybe they didn't want it to be completely. It would have been funner if we called it Pottersville.
Tannentown.
Tannenville.
Tannenville. And of course,
Tannen Valley.
Yeah. And I think Tannen is also, there's also a bit of like Donald Trump there as well, because, I think by the time Back to the Future was being made, Donald Trump was already like a fairly big.
In 89,
A fairly well known. Yeah.
In 89, he was very well known.
Yeah, he would have been. So there's a bit of. Biff certainly looks like Trump in it, apart from the tracksuits.
Yes.
But the hair is very Trump, yeah.
Okay, but, little did they know.
yeah.
Which is, So, basically, George is trying to figure out what's going on here. He ended yesterday's minute looking for Zuzu's pedals in his watch pocket and wasn't able to find them. And then Clarence just starts talking and says, you've been given a great gift, George, a chance to see what the world would be like without you. And George isn't willing to accept it. He goes, wait a minute here. This is some sort of funny dream I'm having. And he goes, so long, mister, I'm going home. Home? What home? Oh, shut up. Cut it out. You're crazy. That's what I think. You're screwy. You're driving me crazy, too.
Love that.
You're driving me crazy, too. I'm seeing things here. I'm going home to see my wife and family. You understand that? And I'm going home alone. You know, so you see there, we get another movie title in here. There you go, Home Alone.
Home Alone, yeah, yeah. I love the way George does this. I love the way Jimmy Stewart plays this. Because, like, I think it's starting to dawn on him. And I think he, at some level, knows that if he goes home, it's not going to go the way he wants. And he really wants to kind of take it out on Clarence. And he like, instead of just walking away and say, whatever, forget you, he turns around and, like, you know, I think you're crazy, you're screwy. And he's like,
because he's still trying to convince himself.
He's trying to he's still trying to convince himself. I absolutely think that. And he knows that Clarence is the key to it. And he knows that, yeah, I think he knows that he's not going to escape this nightmare by just going home.
Correct.
Like, what else can he think of doing?
Yeah, he doesn't really have much of a choice there.
No.
But, I mean, I like the fact that, I mean, yesterday we were talking about the fact that maybe, you know, he was hypnotized. And now he starts saying, well, maybe it's a dream. According to research, and obviously we don't know the true answer, how long do people usually dream per night? Like, what's the average amount of dreaming that people have a night?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so the according to research, they assume that people dream for at least 2 hours of the time that they are sleeping.
So you get a movie in every night.
That's right. There you go.
Feature presentation.
That's right. And that most dreams last anywhere between 5 to 20 minutes. And
oh, so it's more like a season of TV.
There you go. but most of us perceive the dreams happening much faster. So we're watching them at double speed, I guess. But we're still understanding.
And they're just like, I always think it's more like that, just we skip bits in dreams, don't we? And like, even when I can, in those moments when you're waking up and you can really vividly remember a dream, I even remember a lot of the dialogue in the dream as being kind of shorthand, you know, like just part sentences. Like the idea of the full sentence is there.
So you see emojis?
Emojis. yeah, and a lot of text.
LOLs.
Yeah. But then it's just like, yeah, it's just a lot of, like, I will dream the idea of somebody saying, you know, making this whole statement. But, like, when I think back of the actual kind of sensory experience of the dream, in that moment when I can recall it, it's often like, yeah, I didn't bother making that person say that whole thing. I just kind of said, yeah, you get the idea. And I think we do a lot of that stuff. And of course, we do a lot of, like, you're in one location and suddenly you're in another location, not just to skip out the time of traveling from one to the other, but also because of the dream logic of, like, you don't remember where you were a moment later. It's just this stream of consciousness or stream of unconsciousness, I suppose. I love dreams and I really, really rarely remember them. And how do you get on with your dreams?
I usually remember maybe bits and pieces, but through the course of the day that dissipates, you know.
It just disappears, yeah.
Yeah, like you said, when you wake up, if you wake up in the middle of a dream, then you know, I'll usually remember parts of it.
Yeah,
but you can grasp not much more of it. There, yeah. I have a few dreams that I've had over my life that I still remember vividly. There's like two or three of them. But so I'm 50. So that means that that you know, if we were to, you know, so let's say I've slept, you know, 365 days a year for 50 years, the fact that I remember two or three dreams is you know, of the
tells you something. Yeah.
That's right. Of the thousands upon thousands of dreams that I've probably had.
Yeah.
You know, it says a lot about that. And sometimes, you know, you'll remember part of a dream and then later on you'll change it a little bit because you remember it a little differently through the
Yeah.
course of the
The
day and
memory
stuff like
cheats.
that. Yes, I think that's
Yeah,
true.
and the memory cheats with something that's so barely memorable anyway as dreams. You know, I think our memories of our dreams are even less trustworthy than our other memories, you know, because
Right.
it's like grasping smoke. It just slips away.
Yeah. I mean, because I think part of it has to do with the fact that, there are things that happen in dreams that just don't make any sense. It's like, sometimes you might have people in your life that have never met each other, that they're there together or something like that,
And it
or
feels totally normal and natural when it's happening.
that's right.
And you see people this when people are telling you their dreams, they'll often go like, "Oh yeah, and then we must have got in the car because suddenly we were there." It's like, no, it was a dream. You were just there. You didn't need to get in the car, you know.
That's
And they
right.
will like rationalize as they're telling it. It's like, "Oh yeah, I must have managed to introduce this person to that person." No, they just knew each other in this version of reality, and you just didn't notice, you know, because it's a dream. It's just crazy
Right.
stuff. Don't fight it.
According to to what I found here, the research that was done, they claim that most people remember two dreams a week on average. But even though
I'd
the
love to be
dream,
hitting 2 a week.
yeah, me too. But even though it usually is very vivid, if you're thinking about it, you only think of it, like you said, in shorthand. It's really quick when you're thinking about what it is that happened and stuff like that. No, but it's possible that you've woken up during the course of the weekend, you do vaguely remember something, but then it dissipates.
Yes,
I think.
definitely.
I
Immediately.
don't
Yeah,
think,
that definitely happens a
right.
lot.
I don't think they're talking here about long term.
Yes,
They're
that
talking
makes
short
sense.
term, but the idea. And then we have the whole idea of deja vu, because sometimes you might dream something and then you see something similar and you're like, where have I seen that before? Oh, I saw it in my dream.
Well, I think deja vu usually feels like you must have seen the thing in a dream because you can't think of where else you saw. But that's, you know, deja vu is something that's happening just in your brain at that moment,
Right.
which is really strange. It's like a short circuit between recalling something and recording something, and it's just a quirk that happens in the brain when creating a new memory that gets somehow crossed with the process of recalling a memory. And so every bit as it happens, you're like, "I've been here before. I've had this," and you're recalling it. But it's like it's I'm sure sometimes it's you know, a similar thing is to do with having had a dream, but mostly it's just this idea that like it just feels like you have to have had this experience before somehow.
Yes.
But
Yeah. No. So the idea of dreams is really cool. That George, that's what he thinks he's having, because it's very, very, it's very vivid, and he's able to touch Clarence. So I guess
Clarence,
that sort of makes sense.
yeah. I mean, again, it's one of the rationalizing ideas that you would grasp for when something as outlandish as this is happening to you. You know, again, we know he's in a movie, but he doesn't, so
That's right.
he can't entertain that notion.
It's true. It's true. And then George basically starts walking away, and then Clarence looks up and goes, "How am I doing, Joseph?" And then he re then we hear his own response where he goes, "Thanks." And
It's
then he says,
nice.
"No, I didn't have a drink." So I love the way that they acknowledge this a little bit, that we don't have to hear Joseph's voice. We just know that he's talking to him, and that's it. That's enough.
And it just like I just think despite not being a believer myself, I really miss religion and the supernatural and a relationship with God in movies. Because religion is just such a big part of human experience, and it's been kind of sidestepped and kind of excised from Hollywood, from storytelling, in this big way, and we've never like had a conversation about whether it should be or not. And I think it's really a shame. I think we can tell stories about angels. We can tell stories about God intervening in people's lives and people having a relationship with God, people praying and people going to church and everything. And it's like, now that's like only allowed. It's not that it's not allowed. It's that it's like,
it's taboo. It's taboo.
It's quite taboo. And you see it in like,
because people are more concerned about offending.
Yeah.
You know, if you talk about it, you're going to offend people.
Yeah. And it's like, there's some movies that it really sticks out by its absence. You know, I watch Frozen with my daughter, and like at one point, you know, she's a queen and she's a princess and she's getting coronated to become queen. And they're in a church and a stained glass window and the bishop is doing the coronation, but he's not a bishop and it's not a church. It's just a large room with stained glass window, but no crucifix anywhere. And he's got a bishop's shaped hat, but it doesn't have a cross on it. There's no religious symbols anywhere. And it's just, it's set at the time it's set. And she's a princess and it's Europe. And it's like coronations were done with the blessing of the church, and that's how it was done. And I'm not saying Frozen has to be historically accurate, but it's just...
What? Of course it does.
It should be... but it's not about a historical accuracy. It's just about... It should be part of the texture of the movie. There would be nothing wrong with depicting a bishop in this movie. You know what I mean? And I just think... It's so much part of people's lives. And now for somebody who is religious and wants, I mean, certainly on the Christian side of things, I'd be interested to hear the Jewish side of things. But on the Christian side of things, if you want to watch a movie and you want to have your religious experience and your religious beliefs reflected, you have to go and watch a special Christian movie. And usually they're rubbish. And, you know, and they often have like these really heavy-handed, you know, anti-science messages or creationist messages or whatever kind of conservative messaging they have in them, you know. And it's like, it's okay. I think The Simpsons did such a great job of keeping those, even when that was falling out of favor. The Simpsons did, especially in their early seasons, a lot of stories about the local priest and about God, and they, you know, depicted God and his robes and everything, and this great, you know, they had a lot of fun with it and a lot of really good kind of character moments with it and stuff. And I miss it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, you know. Mm-hmm. But what about like, is, you know, like our homegrown Israeli movies, you know, I would imagine are more kind of ready to depict religion and religious practice?
In general, well, because of the way society is here, where you more or less have, you know, part of the society that you have three different groups in society here. You have the people who believe and practice. You have those that believe but don't practice.
Yeah.
Okay. Which are usually children of people who believed and practiced, you know, so there's still like traditional stuff. And then you have the people who don't believe and don't practice. So, you know, it all depends on who's presenting something and what the story is about.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, but I mean,
but it would be normal for a family drama to depict the family going to
temple. Yeah, exactly.
Which is nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my daughters watch a TV show that they decided to, you know, add a character this season who is a believer, you know, and then they have like a dilemma. Okay, we have to do something on Saturday. What do we do? You know, how do we include without excluding? You know,
I don't know.
That's right. That's right. I'm showing you. Good job. There you go.
And I wanted to ask you as well, just more broadly with this movie, This is such a, it's a Christmas movie, and it's a Christian movie. And how do you relate to this? What's your relationship with this movie as a Jew? Like, I know growing up
why do you see it only as a Christian perspective on it? I mean, Jews believe in angels and stuff like that. So I'm
absolutely. And you know, you had angels before we did.
That's true.
You had everything before we did.
The whole world believed that.
Well,
no politics.
But,
No politics.
I was gonna say no. it's just history.
Yes.
Well, that's true. But the supernatural side of it is actually like very compatible with Judaism. But like these are all Christians. And there's praying in this movie, and they're praying to God. Yeah, I guess they're praying to the same God.
But again, we believe in the same God.
It feels very Christian, and these are Christian characters. We can assume.
It also is because the movie is set around a Christian holiday. I mean, again, I did Die Hard and Die Hard 2, which also are set the same thing. So it's not.
But what was Christmas like for you growing up? It must have been like you're kind of part of it, but you're at a remove as well, you know?
Well, I wasn't really a part of it. It was the idea that you see it going on around you. You know, you see all the decorations outside of people's houses. You know, every store you go into, you see things there also. So it's where I live now in Israel, we don't see it at all. You know, there are places. I mean, if you go into Bethlehem, you know, you will see a lot of things there. I mean, but I don't go there. For obvious reasons.
But have you, around that time of year, is Hanukkah kind of, has Hanukkah been like Christmasized in any way? Commercialized?
In some ways. I mean, because the biggest thing in this country around Hanukkah is the idea of eating donuts. You know, so everywhere you go, there's tons of donuts. You know, every bakery is going to have different, you know, like 20 or 30 different types of donuts with different types of icing or different types of things.
And cinnamon this and icing that.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's the way it's been commercialized from that perspective. But again, it's different because, you know, I don't know what it's like in Ireland, but like in America, it's common practice that Christmas is considered a national holiday, you know, as a day off and stuff like that. So everyone is aware of it. So here in Israel, everyone is aware when it's Hanukkah.
Of course.
You know, that's the whole idea because it's a national religious holiday, you know, that type of thing.
And I mean, in Ireland, like, we're only now stepping out from under the shadow of the church, you know, in the last couple of decades, really. So like religious observance used to be compulsorily part of public life in Ireland, you know what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so we still haven't fully, you know, extricated ourselves. And obviously that's the like major kind of social difference between Judaism and specifically Catholicism is this, you know, we have a central, you know, Catholics have a central church and a central authority, and there is like the church being an institution, whereas it's more diffused into society, is my understanding of Judaism. You've got your local rabbi and you've got different schools of thought on things and different. I guess I find like it's another reason, because I'm so opposed to the Catholic Church and because I'm so opposed to that kind of top-down organized religion, that I find, even though I'm not a believer, I find like folk religion, I find people having their own relationship with God, doing, you know, praying and doing this kind of like owning religion in this local way, the way it's depicted in this movie. I think it's really nice, and I think we need more of it. And when you take it out of, you know, in Ireland, if people aren't seeing it in their movies, and we're not seeing it in Irish TV dramas either, then like the only way to access it is through the church, and so now you're kind of feeding into that authority. And so I don't know, this could go a lot of different ways as a conversation, but I just really wanted to get your perspective on this as a Christmas movie and this as a Christian movie. But as you rightly point out, it is all of the religious aspects of this movie are perfectly transferable between Christianity and Judaism, mm-hmm. and relatable to both. Yeah,
correct. Correct. I mean, yeah, obviously you have the idea that there's a there's Christmas trees and there's Christmas carols and things like that in this movie, from that perspective. But in general, the main premise of this movie that I see is that it's not, I don't see it as a Christmas movie.
Really?
Because it's a story about how important each and every person is, and it the fact that it takes place around Christmas makes it a Christmas movie.
Yeah,
but
like Die Hard,
exactly. That's what it, that's what it is. But it's not something that needs to be around this time.
No, you could tell this story at other times of year,
but it's more effective to do it now.
Exactly.
I'm not at all saying that it's not effective. It's very effective.
Yeah. That way. It resonates with the teams, with the reason for the season.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. So basically, the scene changes again, and now we see George in the middle of, I guess you can say, downtown Pottersville. And, you know, we see all of these neon signs in the distance flashing and stuff like that. And, you know, it never dawned on me until I started doing, my research on this movie now, that in the 1940s, they had neon signs. You know, I thought it was a more modern invention. So do you know when neon signs created, invented?
I really identify them with the 50s, and I think of them as a 50s phenomenon, but they're obviously a bit earlier.
Yeah, they actually, a man named George Claude at the Paris Motor Show was the first person to demonstrate the use of neon lighting in 1910.
1910.
Yes.
Wow.
And
yeah, it makes sense. It's only, you know, it's just like if you've got glass blowing, that's the main kind of skill to it. Yeah. And then if you're, you know, scientifically advanced enough to be able to, you know, isolate neon and be able to run a charge through it, that's all you need to do.
Yeah.
But it is, there's a real skill to it. There's a real art to being able to do that. Glass blowing and glass bending in just the right way.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, basically, between the 1920s and 1950s, it became very popular in the US to use neon lights for different things. Now, did you notice some of the signs that are flashing? Did you notice like what's written on them and stuff like that? Or you didn't pay much attention to them?
Tomorrow
we got a lot.
Yeah, there's piles of them.
Yes.
So
today we just have a few.
So hit me with today's one.
Okay, so we have Whiskey's Barrel Wine. Then we have Midnight Dancing. Another one that says Blue Moon Bar.
Blue Moon, I noticed. Yeah.
Then there's the Midnight Club. It says 20 beautiful hostesses.
20 beautiful girls.
No, I think it says hostesses.
All right.
Okay. 20 beautiful hostesses. And then it, underneath it, it says a romantic atmosphere.
All right. Wow, that's a different sign, because there's another sign that also says 20 for the burlesque house says 20 gorgeous girls. So there's something about that's tomorrow. Yeah, there's something magic about the number 20. It must be the sexiest, the number of gorgeous dames to put in the same place.
Apparently,
it must be 20.
Apparently, maybe because of building code, you couldn't have more than 20 in the room.
We got to limit the number of broads on the stage.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very interesting the way that all these signs, again, tomorrow we'll get a lot more into the way the flashing signs is, but George is basically just mesmerized as he's looking at all of these things because he just can't believe what he's seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I love the way that they accentuate the whole scene by we hear jazz music in the background. And
there's still like roaring of the crowds like ringing in his ears from like just party atmosphere, laughing and shouting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's also we hear a police siren, which is also telling us what type of place we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
You know,
we're dealing with of iniquity. Well, many dens of iniquity. Yeah.
That's right. And we can see that this is a shock to the system for George. Because he is not expecting. He didn't expect this. No, not at all.
This is not his Bedford Falls.
No, this is not your previous life's Bedford Falls.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else for this minute,
Austin? Yeah. No, we get into signage much more, and we get into the the wild world of, by today's standards, quite tame entertainment and things that are that's on show here, but really that's it for me today. I did just want to ask you, maybe you've been talking about this in the series, but have you thought about like what would be different in a world without you, Rob?
Wow. That's a very, I think I would have a George Bailey take on it that I would say that the world wouldn't be that different, but
yeah,
you never know.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that I've thought a lot about, you know, from that perspective.
There'd be significantly fewer episodes of Movies by Minute.
There would be episodes and seasons. There would be at this point six less movies that would be done Movies by Minute wise. That is true.
Mm.
Okay, that is something. But I don't think you guys would notice it. You know, someone else would have done it. That would have been it. You know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't notice the absence of something in general.
That's
but,
right.
Yeah, and this movie has to romanticize it a little bit, and you know, and we'll get to those moments. But yeah, I suppose I was just thinking about it. For me, I suppose that like in my, obviously in your kind of private life, you know what I mean? You know about your friends and family and all of that. But. I was just trying to think of like impact on the wider world. And like, I was a singer in a wedding band, as I constantly bring up in these podcasts, because it was what I did for 10 years before I did this. So I might've said it to you before, but that like, yeah, we played as a band, we played about 1,000 weddings, and they were definitely not all good gigs, but for the most part, we really entertained people and we really gave them a memorable night. And I do kind of think that like, yeah, that's something I can look at as a, if I saw the world without me, there would have been a lot, you know, those weddings would have gone ahead in whatever form they went ahead in. I'm sure everyone would have had a nice time, but yeah, that was that's my little corner.
Oh, wow. Okay. That makes sense. It's very cool. Again, I haven't really thought that much about it because, you know, there, as you said, thinking about the absence of something makes it much more difficult to try to comprehend how it's going to do things and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's why George has this, unique opportunity, as Clarence points out to him. He gets to see. Because if you just change the timeline and nobody's there to observe it, it's meaningless. You know what I mean?
Correct.
It's like it might as well have happened the other way.
Right.
Whereas if somebody has knowledge of each timeline or each reality, then that's where meaning comes from.
Right. Right. I agree with you. So every Wednesday we have a segment called It's a Wonderful Wednesday, where the idea of this segment is is based on the fact that over the last 78 years since this movie came out, there have been tons and tons of different forms of media that have taken the basic premise of this movie and adapted it to something else. So each week I talk about some other form of It's a Wonderful Life. Sometimes it's a TV show that uses the thing. Sometimes it's I've talked about comic books. I've talked about radio shows.
That's great.
And today we're actually going to talk about another movie. This is actually a recent movie. Just came out at the end of 2023, and it's a movie. I don't know if you're a horror fan or not. I'm generally not, but
I'm not, no.
right.
I mean, I like a good b horror movie if it happens to be a good movie, but I'm not, I won't
Right.
seek out horror
Yeah, no,
films
I usually
usually,
don't, but this one, because of the title, it jumped out at me. The movie is called It's a Wonderful Knife.
All right. Crazy.
It came out last December, and the basic premise of the movie is very similar to It's a Wonderful Life. It is about a teenage girl who, on Christmas Eve, there's a killer in town, and she ends up saving the day after I think three or four people are killed, and she electrocutes the killer.
The killer.
And then a year later, we see how her life has been changed by the fact, because like her best friend was one of the ones that was killed and stuff like that. And she feels that she is no longer wanted, and she basically makes a wish that maybe the whole world would be better off if she was never born. So, in contrast to this movie, It's a Wonderful Life, there's only like, you talked about the other day that there are 17 minutes in this movie where we're in the alternate reality. But in that movie, it's almost the exact opposite. It's like 17 minutes in the regular reality, and then the rest of the movie is all about what happens afterwards. So basically, I'm not going to give away too much, but the general premise is that since she wasn't there to stop the killer, a year later, a killer has been the same killer. Has continued his rampage, and now I think there are 30 people that were killed over the course of the year. And she then needs to figure out, she sees how many people that were close to her, in her life are now missing because of the fact that she didn't stop it, that type of thing. Again, it's a fun idea. It's a fun concept for the way that they do it. They do it. As I mentioned before, I'm not the biggest fan of horror movies, but it
But
was it's
it's a
a
horror trope. Sorry.
that's right. No, it's definitely it's a
The
fun
horror
horror.
trope of the final girl.
That's right. It's a fun look at this whole thing. So I enjoyed it.
Cool.
It wasn't spectacular, but I like the way that they did it. I like that they the science that they use in it to try and explain the way things happen and stuff like that. So, if anyone wants to go, you can go onto my regular website and see a review of the movie. It's a
Oh,
Wonderful
cool.
Knife. Just go. I'll let you behind the I'll let people behind the curtain a little bit. So I reviewed it in the end of February. So if you look on my
I
website
see.
and you go back and you can see a review of it to
Did
see what I thought of It's a Wonderful Life.
you talked about, or are you going to talk about the Simpsons, a world without zinc?
It's on the list. It's not something that I've talked
It's
about
on the
yet.
list. Good, good. That's a great one.
Yes.
And I can't help thinking about it when I watch the movie. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds great. All right. So, Austin, would you like to tell people once again where they can find Austin Pryor?
Just whisper my name into the wind or go to MalkovichMinute.net.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for a Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, MovieAroundMinute.com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot diggity dog.
Love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.